It's Friday, so there's that. We've got movies and soccer and our weekly wrap of Wall Street and beyond. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Friday today, the 29th of May. Good as always to have you here, everybody. Look, you know where we're going to start. I know where we're going to start. So why don't we just start, right? The past 5 days in the global economy in four very tight minutes of live radio. Felix Salmon from Fusion, Lynette Lopez from Business Insider. Ready, go. Hey, guys.
Hi.
Hello, Kai.
Kai, hey, how's it going?
You were ready. You were totally ready. We're going to do this.
We're totally here for you.
I almost jumped the gun.
That's all right. Don't worry about it. Lots to move through. Here's what we're going to do. I want to get, Lynette, your gut check on GDP figure this morning, down 0.7% first quarter. Do you care?
I don't.
Okay, that's good. That's an acceptable
answer. I think it's very controversial right now. And usually when I do television or radio or everything, I'm the bear in the room. I'm like, we're all going to die, and the economy's terrible,
okay,
and everything's awful. But
panic
with GDP,
run into
not
the
so
sea.
Much. Partly because there's this thing called GDI, which is in GDP, which is everything within the economy, all the revenue we have, the jobs, blah, blah, blah. And
that looks okay.
That was up 1.7%. That was good. So let's talk about the bright stuff and move on. It's summer.
You and Justin Wolfers, to name drop an economist. Felix, you do care, though, huh?
Well, I'm...
out with it.
I'm kin of Lynette. I'm one of those journalists are naturally pessimistic, and
yes.
I see a thing which says the economy shrank by a non-negligible amount over the first quarter. That could be the jitters. I mean, it's going to bounce back in the second quarter.
Well,
we're not in a recession, but it's not good news. It can't be good news.
All right, fair
enough. Yeah, you're right. It can't be good news.
All right, can't be good news. We will leave it there. Lynette, I want to talk about China. There's been a whole bunch of up and down in its stock market. It is, of course, the second largest economy in the world, trying to achieve that soft landing while not really landing at all. How worried are you about China? Since this is the clearly Are You Worried weekly wrap.
I only get as worried about China as the Chinese government gets. And if you have been reading the People's Daily and all the state propaganda, it's almost like that scene in Animal House where Kevin Bacon is like, remain calm,
Kevin Bacon wasn't in Animal House.
Wait, wasn't that Kevin Bacon?
No, Kevin Bacon was not in
John
Animal
Belushi?
House.
No, yeah, he was. He was the guy who got flattened
during the parade. We're going to continue this offline. Just trust me. Kevin Bacon was not in Animal House. He was like 16.
I can't wait. I can't wait.
Anyway, the point being, everybody remain calm.
They're panicking. But the fact is that the stock market is the worst conceivable.
Well, that's why
way
I didn't ask you.
But we're not talking about the stock market here. We're talking about overlevered state companies and overlevered, construction and property. Companies that were really the backbone of the Chinese economy.
What she said.
And whose shares are going through the roof or have been all year.
Well, their shares are going through the roof because Chinese people are borrowing money so that they can play in the stock market. And the government wants them to because they want more cash flowing through the economy. They want Chinese people to spend their savings. So the government's like, okay, you see that the economy is slowing down, remain calm. But yeah, take the money that you have, put it in the stock market. And so that's why we're seeing these huge whipsaws. And, and during all of this, the backdrop of the economy is not good.
Right. Felix, very quickly on China, and then I want to ask you about Greece real quick, and then I got one more thing.
So China is scary because we do have, I hate the word bubble. I don't think you should use it in any bond market thing, but the stock market is looking very scary. And Lynette's absolutely right that there's a lot of bad debt. And frankly, all those Chinese people who are buying stocks should just be spending the money on stuff instead.
Right.
And that
totally.
Would be
well, that
whole
the domestic consumption over there has long been a problem.
Yes.
Yeah. Right.
All right. You know what? We're going to skip Greece because we do Greece all the time. Felix, I want to get you, since you're the Briton in the room, I don't want to get your take quickly.
England.
Well, give me a song?
That's a song.
Stop, will you? Give me your FIFA rant here for a minute. Sepp Blatter got his job back.
The most corrupt organization in the world. We know it's just a cesspool of corruption, and I can't believe, but I'm quite happy that the FBI of all people.
You're welcome, honey. We don't even like soccer.
Come in and arrest a whole bunch of people, not including the most corrupt person of all, who's the guy at the top. But with any luck, they'll get a couple of the one or two layer down people to flip, and they'll eventually find him and get him. But he was reelected today to another term. It's unbelievable.
We got to go. Felix Hammond from Fusion and Lynette Lopez from Business Insider. Thanks, you guys.
Thank you.
Kai.
Have a good weekend. All right, one last thing on GDP before we go. Sometimes, you know, pictures help explain stuff. So we've got a video explainer up. Suffice it to say, it's got Facebook and Game of Thrones in it. Marketplace.org is what you're looking for. The video link is up at the top of the page. Wall Street on this last trading day of May. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. There is now a 105-page document that's going to help guide reforms in the police department of Cleveland, Ohio. The consent decree, as it's technically known, was agreed to this week after the federal government accused Cleveland cops of having a history of using excessive force and of civil rights violations. Those two issues, of course, are the conversation around policing and society in this country today. Conversations that all police departments are having as they try to diversify and so better reflect the communities they serve. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman has the next installment of our series, Behind the Blue Line.
Charles Wilson has been on the job for 44 years.
I started my police career in Ohio. I've done patrol, I've done traffic, I've worked narcotics, I've worked internal affairs, I've been a police chief.
That career began in the early 1970s. Wilson was just out of high school with a baby on the way.
I needed a job. The police department was hiring. Took the test, got on the job, and been crazy ever since, I guess.
Crazy, perhaps. Lonely, as an African-American in mostly white departments, most definitely. Wilson is now a policeman in Providence, Rhode Island, and he heads the National Association of Black Law Enforcement Officers. Getting more black and brown people to wear blue has become a bit of a crusade for him.
The vast majority of law enforcement remains the bastion of white officers.
He wishes more minority young people would consider joining up.
It pays well, the benefits are good, and you have the opportunity to truly make a difference in people's lives.
That pay, it starts at $45,000 nationwide for a job that doesn't require college. The Bureau of Justice Statistics recently reported that African Americans now make up 12% of police officers nationwide. The figure hasn't budged since the late 1990s. And though it isn't far below the black share of population as a whole,
if you've got 12% African American police officers in a community that's 60, 70, or 80% African American, you're not doing very well.
Dolores Jones Brown is a professor at John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York, and she often teaches minority police officers. She says it matters where they sit in the hierarchy.
Many of the police personnel who are of color are likely not at a command staff level, and so that means that they're not being able to make many decisions about what kinds of policies and practices will be in place.
One thing getting in the way of recruitment at all levels, says Jones Brown, the rising African-American middle class.
African-Americans who are smart enough, college-educated enough, or otherwise talented in arenas that pay more money and produce less risk are taking advantage of those opportunities.
People of color from less privileged backgrounds might welcome these good government jobs, but, says Jones Brown, many can't pass the entry test, the credit check, or the criminal background check.
Young men who live in highly policed communities stand very little chance of making it to, say, age 24 without having had some police encounter.
A recent study in the journal Crime and Delinquency found that by age 23, half of black men had been arrested, compared to just 38% of white men. Criminology professor John Eterno witnessed this firsthand as a precinct captain in New York City, where he says cops issued
numerous summonses, arrests for relatively low-level things like marijuana possession. Now that they have a criminal record, these young minority kids, it's much more difficult to get them into law enforcement.
Relaxing those disqualifying criteria, though, would still leave the stigma of joining the police, says longtime cop Charles Wilson.
There is a significant amount of distrust and dissatisfaction with law enforcement. people I talk to nowadays say it ain't cool to be the popo.
It isn't too cool to be the police in Hispanic neighborhoods either. The percentage of Hispanics in law enforcement has increased since 2007, but the job's still a tough sell.
Most Hispanics, where they come from, they don't really like police.
Ismael Cano is a Mexican-American police officer with nearly a decade on the force.
They don't feel like they can trust police and call the police to help them.
Cano works in the small city of Pasco in eastern Washington state. Migrant farm workers have settled there in recent decades, and it's now majority Latino. Chock-a-block with taquerias. You hear Mexican corridos on the radio.
Okay, check it out. Vámonos por ese lado.
Officer Cano appears regularly on this local Spanish-language radio station to talk up policing as a career. But then he says he'll meet people at a party.
I'm proud of what I do, but, you know, they will start walking away. And usually by the end of the party, I would end up by myself in a corner because nobody, you know, wanted to talk to me.
Pasco's had its share of conflict over race and policing lately after an unarmed Hispanic man was shot dead by three officers. Activists want to see more Latinos on the force, though police captain Ken Roski insists Pasco's doing pretty well.
We've been praised by other cities at having a workforce, turns out to be about 21% Hispanic and or Spanish-speaking officers.
The city pays extra to anyone who can speak Spanish, and it's recruiting more young Latinos through the Boy Scouts Explorer program. But police trainer Michael Coker says departments need to do even more. Coker's a retired black officer from Portsmouth, Virginia, who offers courses all over the country, and I reached him between classes in a small town in Texas.
Well, one thing's for sure, even when I go teach classes, you don't see a whole lot of diversity in the classroom.
Coker says to recruit more minorities, you have to have more role models. He had one, a young black cadet.
So he would give me a ride to work. About a year later, he became a cop. I became a cadet because he made it seem so cool. I did a ride-along, got in the car with him, and I was sucked in.
But making policing seem cool to young people of color, that could be a heavy lift these days. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Coming up,
you can only product test your product to a very limited degree,
which is tricky when your product is a $100 million movie. But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrial is off 115 points today, 0.6%, closed at 18,010 this Friday. The NASDAQ down 27 points, about a half percent, 50.75070. The S&P 500 gave back 13 points, 0.6%, 21.07. For the month of May, the Dow up 0.9%. The NASDAQ added 2.6%, the S&P 500 up 1%. Frontline Limited, that's a shipping company that owns and operates oil tankers, reported sharply higher earnings, but shares down 11%. Cryoport provides what is called cold chain logistics. They need to transport some stem cells or some embryos or something. Cryoport keeps them cold. Today's shares, however, chilled 3%. Bond prices rose. The yield on the 10-year T-note down to 2.12%. You're listening to Marketplace.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at what's coming up Monday, June 1st. In Washington, the Commerce Department reports on personal income and spending for April. It's the movie with the famous scene of Marilyn Monroe in that white dress standing over a subway grate. The 7-Year Itch premiered 60 years ago in New York. And are sweets your thing? Rejoice! June is Candy Month. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We talked FIFA quickly up in the wrap, Felix and I did, but there is an honest-to-good non-corruption business angle to be had here. Sepp Blatter getting his job back or not. The corruption stink is off-putting, yes, but few are the other global events that provide the marketing reach that the World Cup does. Given the events of the week, though, FIFA sponsors have some big investments on the line that they have to figure out what they're going to do with. Marketplace's Adam Allington has the story.
Talk about a bad week for the beautiful game. Soccer is not only the world's most popular sport, it is, as you might imagine, also a huge marketing opportunity.
You could put the World Cup on the moon, and the amount of eyeballs watching the World Cup would not change.
Rob Prasmark is the CEO of 21 Sports and Entertainment Marketing. With a global audience of over 3 billion, an advertising deal with the FIFA World Cup carries enormous upside. And Prasmark says FIFA still has 3 years until the next World Cup in Russia to repair its image.
And if they don't, the sponsors will either walk away or find a way to sue them, or they'll just let their contracts expire.
But don't hold your breath on that happening, says Jonathan Lee, Managing Director of Marketing and Strategy at Huge.
Brands aren't going to walk away or bail on FIFA unless the fans actually bail on football.
And even though that's not likely to happen, with so much money and prestige on the line, corporate sponsors might exert pressure on Sepp Blatter, FIFA's newly reelected president, in other ways.
Will they force him to reconsider proceedings going forward and awarding of that 2022 World Cup?
Patrick Risch is director of the sports business program at Washington University. He says awarding Qatar the 2022 World Cup was highly suspect to begin with, and advertisers like Coca-Cola or Adidas won't want their name dragged through the mud over and over again for the next 7 years. I'm Adam Allington for Marketplace.
We were talking yesterday on the program about homelessness and about how the number of people in Los Angeles County living completely out in the open, that's without any real shelter, they're in encampments in streets and in parks, has more than doubled in the past 2 years. There are services available for them, but they don't always help when things have come down to living in a tent. Marketplace's Jeff Tyler has this second of two stories.
A dozen or so tents have sprouted up on this sidewalk in recent months, just across the 110 freeway from LA's skyscrapers, in plain sight of the lawyers and bankers and investment professionals passing on their way to work.
People go by us and think we're invisible. It's frustrating and very degrading.
That's 44-year-old Dennis Epping, who shares a tent with 52-year-old Christine Boyer. They've been together for over a decade. In the past, when they fell on hard times, they could rely on family.
See, we could always go home, but my mom died, and so I don't have any parents left or grandparents or anything, so we just took to the road.
They have issues that keep them from holding down regular jobs. He has a felony record for burglary. She has a spinal disability that makes it hard to stand or sit in the same position for long.
I go panhandle every day to make money. I'm not going to just sit here and rot. I have to get up every day and go hustle at least $20 to $50. Otherwise, I don't feel like I've done anything, you know.
They spent some of that money on laundry.
I don't know if you've noticed that there's a lot of clothes in the trashes and all over the streets because they give them away free everywhere. You don't have to do your laundry.
For Christine, doing the laundry is a way to maintain some dignity. Dennis and Christine say they could sleep inside at a shelter, but that would require them to separate.
It doesn't matter what we go through so long as we don't get pulled apart.
We've been through worse.
We're all we have. We don't have anything else.
The lack of a social safety net is a constant theme. I heard it again at a neighboring tent. 48-year-old Anthony Colbar told me that he and his wife were pushed out of their low-income apartment so the new owner could raise the rents. They don't have friends or family to put them up, so they've been out here for about 3 weeks.
I'm from Illinois. I'm a journeyman. My dad was a journeyman. His dad was a journeyman. Can't find any work out here.
All of his job prospects require a car, so he's saving up to buy wheels and looking for another cheap apartment.
It's hard to save money when you're out here. There's no refrigerator to go to Food for Less and stock up on food. There's no way to heat water to eat noodles, ramen noodles and stuff. So we eat a lot of lunch meat, a lot of sandwiches.
Colbar says he and his wife receive about $1,200 a month from government aid. Even though he doesn't get paid for it, Colbar does some work every day, cleaning the sidewalk and gutters with a broom. He says his neighbors don't help.
They don't realize how good we have it right here. We don't have to take our tents down. There's businesses. People walk by here every day. You got to keep it clean, keep it clean. They'll leave us alone. Because until we find another place, this is where we're at.
The encampments aren't just downtown. 8 miles northeast, one tent after another lines the freeway along the Arroyo Seco riverbank. Under a bridge, I found dogs guarding three tents. One belongs to 23-year-old Eddie Hansen. He shares it with his girlfriend, 18-year-old Hope Hunter.
Yeah, we've been in this tent for almost, what, 3 months, baby?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Why did you pick this particular spot?
The coverage, it's out of the rain. I'm able to get electricity, a few things that I need as far as survival.
They get electricity by splicing into the line connected to a street light.
And what do you do for money?
For money, I usually collect cans or scrap metal, copper, whatever I can find laying on the side of the road out here. People throw out amazing trash.
Eddie scavenged a beat-up sofa and built a fire pit for cooking. He gets about $700 a month in government assistance. I asked him about getting a job.
They expect homeless people to provide for themselves as far as work, but records or drug inabilities disallow them to get a job.
Eddie says he's been living on the street since he was 12. He has a record for assaults and stealing cars. Hope says she's been homeless since she was 14. She got addicted to speed, but says she's sober now.
I go to NA meetings regularly now, just so I can stay clean. Because just because I'm homeless doesn't mean I have to look homeless or act homeless. It's good not to live up to a stereotype that everyone already thinks. You know, it's good to prove people wrong.
Hope says she got her GED at a homeless shelter when she was 17. I ask if she's interested in finding a job.
I've been looking for a job, but if you're homeless, a lot of them will be like, oh, you're homeless? Like, we don't want you working here. How are you going to take a shower? How are you going to do all that?
And do you have any plans for getting an apartment or anything?
Yeah, we're trying. My grandpa, I recently got in contact with some of my family, and they're going to help me with $500 so I can get a camper. So that, because I'm pregnant. I just found out I was pregnant. Oh, dear. So it's really stressful for me because I can't take my baby home without having an address.
In Los Angeles, I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
This one got by me somehow, but it seems last weekend's box office was one of the worst Memorial Day openings in years, thanks in large part to Tomorrowland, which cost a couple of $100 million to make and got a lukewarm response at best, including mine. They did get some of my money. This weekend could bring more pain. We've got the Cameron Crowe film Aloha upon us, a $40 million romantic comedy starring Bradley Cooper and Emma Stone. Early word has been, shall we say, unkind. Movies are, when it gets right down to it, a product that gets one chance to open big or not. And that, as Marketplace's Adrian Hill tells us, makes things quite dicey.
Hollywood proudly plays by its own rules.
I have lone wolfed it all the way. That's who I am.
It knows what we want from our movies.
In any of its many forms, I have found that nothing beats fun.
And even though nothing beats fun, as Bradley Cooper's character tells us in Aloha, sometimes Hollywood doesn't deliver. The reviews for Aloha are pretty scathing. The Washington Post calls it an incoherent poo-poo platter. The New York Daily News says it has a pitiable odor about it, like a dog that sat too long on the beach. And it's not just Aloha. A lot of movies wind up stinky. But why? Haven't we raised product development to an art in this country? Sure, you get your new Cokes now and then, but there seem to be more big-budget flops from Hollywood than more traditional product makers. I call up Steven Eppinger, who teaches product design at the MIT Sloan School of Management.
Good, experienced designers, they know that, you know, your first idea is just one idea, and ideas are cheap. And the right approach is to consider many ideas and choose the best ones.
And even the best ideas need a lot of massaging to become a product people want to buy.
Typically, it involves design, build, test iterations.
Think it, make it, test it over and over and over and over. It's hard enough if you're coming up with a new hamburger. Pickles on, pickles off, pickles on. But harder if you're a Hollywood studio. Alex Franklin is a lecturer in the film and television department at UCLA. He also spent years as a studio exec.
You can only product test your product to a very limited degree.
There are test audiences for movies, but they're small, and it's hard to know how much to trust what they say.
You're taking a gamble that these are the people who would ordinarily pay for the movie.
And making changes isn't cheap. You got to reshoot, recut. At some point, the studios have to stop tweaking because too much of that creates a whole other set of problems. And just go with what they have.
at their heart, even though these are pieces of commerce, they are also the artistic creations of individual storytellers. And to some extent, since nobody really knows what they're doing here, you try to trust people based on their past successes.
But as any investment advisor will tell you, past performance is no guarantee of future results. I'm Adrienne Hill for Marketplace.
Final note on the way out today. First of all, mea culpa. It seems I was totally wrong about Kevin Bacon. He was indeed in Animal House. And I now, Twitter tells me, oh, Lynette Lopez a martini the next time in New York. So there's that. Second of all, though, more seriously and more soberly, this is of primary interest, I suppose, to Californians, but also to anybody who eats any of the fruit and vegetables that are grown out here. A chart out from the California Snow Survey today showed that the California snowpack, the source of a huge chunk of the water supply in this state, is at 0% of normal. There is basically no snow left up in the mountains. All righty, got to go. The Dow off 115 points today, about 0.6%. The NASDAQ down 27 points, 0.5%. The S&P 500 down 13 points, that is 0.6%. Our theme music was composed by B.J. Lederman. Marketplace was developed by J.J. Yore. Tommy Andres is the acting senior producer. Deborah Clark is in charge around here. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We'll see you Monday, and this is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.